Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
And good evening from Washington. We begin tonight with breaking news, and it has all the signs of being something big. CNN has learned that the State Department's inspector general has sent what sources describe as an urgent email requesting a bipartisan congressional staff briefing tomorrow related to documents on Ukraine. One congressional aide called the email, quote, highly unusual and cryptically worded. This comes at the end of a day that saw the State Department and three House committees battling over depositions from some of the key players in the Ukraine story, with allegations of administration stonewalling and signs late today that at least some parts of that stone wall appear to be crumbling. Also tonight, a remarkable new look inside President Trump's vision for the U.S.-Mexico border. The story in the New York Times, citing multiple White House and administration officials, says the president often talked about a border trench filled with snakes or alligators and spoke of shooting migrants in the legs. We have the two reporters on the byline of the story on the broadcast tonight. But first, the Ukraine story, the very latest on this email from the State Department Inspector General. CNN's Kylie Atwood joins us now with that. So what do we know about this?
Well, this is a pretty shocking, urgent request from the State Department Inspector General. They came to Congress today and they said that they do want to discuss Ukraine and the State Department. We really don't know many details of what they're coming to Congress with. But as you said, it was described to me by a congressional aide as highly unusual and cryptically worded. They are not sure what they're going to discuss tomorrow. But what we do know, an aide explained to me that the request said that they had, the Inspector General of the State Department, had received documents from the acting legal counsel, the legal advisor at the State Department. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if the Inspector General is operating on its own here. It had interactions with the State Department before this request went forth. And it's also noteworthy that it came to Congress just an hour after Secretary Pompeo sent a letter to Congress alleging that these depositions leading up to these requests for depositions of five current and former State Department officials had amounted to bullying and intimidating State Department officials. So we'll have to see how that plays out and how this new information impacts the impeachment inquiry.
And Secretary Pompeo essentially seems to be, I don't know if it's playing for time or just making the argument that this is happening too fast, that they need more time in order to figure out how to comply or not.
Yeah, that's what he said. But he didn't actually say that we're just going to pick some new dates and this is going to happen. He said that they want to review some of the legal and procedural questions that he had. I also think it's highly important some of the questions that he had here. I mean, he said that the committees had been sending intimidating communications to career State Department officials. He himself did not provide any evidence for that, but that is what he's alleging here. He also said that the committees told these State Department officials that they could not come with counsel from the State Department. So Pompeo, they're frustrated that Congress is trying to cut out the executive branch of their conversations with current State Department officials.
It's also a little rich that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is accusing those investigating the whistleblower complaints as bullies and intimidating when it's the President of the United States who was bullying and saying terrible things about the ambassador to the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, a career foreign service officer who Secretary of State Pompeo, I mean, he has not defended the career foreign service officers in the State Department really much at all.
No, he hasn't. I mean, he has not taken any opportunity to defend that ambassador who you just referenced. That's the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine who was recalled early. She wasn't supposed to come back, and folks on the Hill called it a political hit job, said that the Trump administration was trying to get her out. Pompeo didn't come to her defense. She is a career State Department official, and she is one of the folks, however, who has already agreed and rescheduled a date to speak with Congress. That's going to be October 11th. It was supposed to be tomorrow, but they pushed it back a little bit.
All right, Kylie, I would appreciate it. Thanks. A lot of fast-moving developments tonight. Independent Senator Angus King of Maine caucuses with Democrats and sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee, whose staff is expected to hear from the State Department Inspector General tomorrow. I spoke to the senator just before airtime. Senator King, I just want to start by asking about the State Department Inspector General requesting this briefing tomorrow on Capitol Hill. The Senate Intelligence Committee is among those expected to be briefed. I'm sure you can't say much. I'm not sure how much you actually know or anybody knows at this point. I'm just wondering, what is your initial reaction?
Well, inspectors general are very important people in the United States government. Their job is to be a watchdog. Their job is to be independent of politics, of the people who are running the agency. And so the fact that the inspector general at the State Department, as well as you know, this all started with the inspector general at the intelligence agency, has something to say to the committee, that's important. I don't know what it is. I haven't been briefed on it, but it certainly is something that sounds significant, particularly because he stated that it's urgent, that he wants to do this meeting right away.
And just, a lot we don't know, and as you said, you haven't been briefed on it. Is the Inspector General at the State Department free to, you know, this came shortly after the Secretary of State had a lot of pushback, said they're not going to, you know, be intimidated, things like that. Is the Inspector General free to contradict what the Secretary of State has said publicly about not cooperating?
Well, I don't know specifically about the Inspector General law at the State Department, but generally, Inspectors General have wide latitude, particularly in reporting things to Congress. That's their job. And so I would say it's likely that this inspector general has every right to go to Congress. That's how the statute was designed across the government. And by the way, Anderson, it's really interesting. The first whistleblower statute was in 1778 in the Continental Congress, where they set up a whistleblower statute that said anyone who knows of malfeasance in the government has a duty to report it. And we've got continuity for 240 years on that principle that's certainly coming into important play right now.
The context of it is also incredibly important. You know, people are pointing out that, well, there's not a direct quid pro quo hanging over the head of the Ukrainian president, the new Ukrainian president, the young Ukrainian president, doesn't have a career as a politician or as a leader, is this fight with Russia that is going on. And the hundreds of millions of dollars in U.S. aid that will aid that fight. And that is the context with which the president is asking for a favor.
And the president unilaterally cut off that aid without any consultation with anybody that I've ever heard of. Apparently, State Department was against it. Defense Department was against it. He did it. It was his order through the Office of Management and Budget about a week or two before this phone call. And he starts the conversation. The first sentence is, you know, we've done a lot for you. And then later on, of course, is the famous exchange where Zelensky says, we're ready, Mr. President, to buy these Javelin missiles for our defense. And the president said, yes, but first I have a favor, though. And that's pretty powerful evidence. The other thing, Anderson, I had a hunch about this this so-called transcript, so I had two staff members of my office the other day read it aloud, and we timed it. They read at a normal speaking pace. It took 10 minutes and 40 seconds. The phone call was 30 minutes.
Wow, that's
interesting. Now, we don't know what's missing. It may be that there was a translator involved, and that made it go much longer, but the president of Ukraine speaks English. If there was no translator, that raises a question of what's in the other 20 minutes of that discussion. So that's the point, I think, and that's why I've been very conservative on impeachment. I haven't been pushing for it, but that's why I think there has to be an inquiry to get to the facts surrounding this, what looks like at least an attempted transaction.
And you're right. The transcript is just it's from the recollection of people, I believe, in the Situation Room some other potential audio that may be out there. I think is that would there be a recording of the phone call from intelligence agencies? From and is that is there more out there, you think, details of the call?
I don't know. But my understanding is that the practice would have been to simultaneously not record the conversation, but we see people with this mask and they talk into it and say all the words and it makes a literally a transcript. I would be surprised if that doesn't exist. And I think that's obviously one of the pieces that we have to find out more about. The other thing, Anderson, that's really bothering me about this is this tossing around of the word treason. Treason is the only crime specifically defined in the Constitution. Article 3, Section 3 defines treason essentially as siding with an enemy of the country in a war. And to throw it around in this situation, the problem is the president feels that he's the state, you know, like Louis XIV, I am the state. So criticism of him is treason against the United States. That's not true. That's just not the way it works. And whistleblowers are people that come forward. And by the way, the whistleblower doesn't decide the case. He or she has brought forth a set of facts, which are now in the hands of Congress, and they have the opportunity to investigate it to find out whether the whistleblower is right or wrong. But the whistleblower did a public service, which is exactly what people are supposed to do. If they see what they believe is an abuse of power in the federal government, they're supposed to report it. That's what this whistleblower did, and now we're going to have a chance to get to the bottom of what those allegations were.
Are you confident that Congress can protect this whistleblower's identity?
I certainly hope so, because, you know, the president is using words like interview, but last week he was using words like spy and implying execution. That's a threat. And, you know, those were the words he was using last week. If this goes, if articles of impeachment come from the House, I'm a juror. So I'm, although you've heard me express some real frustration about what's going on, I'm going to rest my final decision, if it comes to that, on what the facts are and what's actually presented to the Senate in a trial, which we would be presided over by the Chief Justice.
Senator Angus King, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Anderson.
Well, more next on what to make of the breaking news as we look at the White House lit up pink for breast cancer awareness. We'll get perspective from two former insiders, veterans of state, justice, and the White House on what this could mean. Later, two New York Times correspondents join us to talk about moats on the border with snakes and maybe alligators shooting migrants in the legs, things that White House insiders were willing to dish about the president. Tonight's breaking news that the State Department's Inspector General wants urgently to brief a string of House and Senate committees on something Ukraine-related. That story is unfolding as we speak. We'll continue bringing you any late developments as we learn about them. Right now, we're lucky to have with us former State Department spokesperson, Obama White House Communications Director Jen Psaki, also CNN Chief Political Correspondent Dana Bash, CNN Chief Legal Analyst Jeffrey Toobin with us, as well as Elliot Williams, who served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General during the Obama administration and is currently a CNN Legal Analyst. Jen, just from what you, I mean, from your own experience, is it possible, and you were talking about this right before we came on air, is it possible this Inspector General is going to be saying something that supports Secretary of State Pompeo?
Well, we don't know. We don't know what he's going to say. I will say there's some history here, though, with Secretary Pompeo and the political appointees in the State Department. One, there's a lot of bad blood back to the Benghazi investigations, which Secretary Pompeo was leading in the House. He dragged a lot of civil servants and foreign service officers, many of whom are still there, up before Congress. He also hasn't been known as somebody who has been a big defender of the institution or the people of serving there, including some of these ambassadors who are being asked to go testify. So that's important context. And he's also a subject of this entire controversy. So we don't know what he's going. It's highly unusual. I think that's clear. We don't know what he's going to present. But I think it's also likely that there is information related to the letter Pompeo sent today,
exactly,
related to unhappiness within the State Department about how this has been handled. You know, these
these are career civil servants who are used to abiding by asks of Congress, by the institution, and this is a bit out of the norm for them.
Dana? Yeah, no, and Kylie mentioned this earlier, the fact that Pompeo's letter to Congress, which he tweeted simultaneously, that I have no intention of letting my people talk to you. And by the way, Congress is browbeating members of my staff and members of the State Department. The fact that that came not that long before the Inspector General called Capitol Hill and said, I want to talk to all of these committees, suggests that maybe it's not the IG, you know, that we saw at the DNI, where it's like, I want to represent a whistleblower. It might be, okay, guys, we understand where you're coming from, that you want information, but just slow your roll a little bit here. It could be the opposite, too. It could be I had these people come to me who want to talk to you. They don't feel comfortable because of what Mike Pompeo said. I want to try to help. It could be either way. We just don't know.
And you know, one of the sort of broader questions about this impeachment investigation in its entirety is, will the Trump administration allow anyone from any part of the government, from the White House, from the Justice Department, from the State Department, to testify? Because as the oversight committees have been going forward, basically they haven't.
Right.
They have stonewalled
and it's
almost
effective.
Everything.
I mean, it's been effective.
It's effective. And you know, the Congress has had to go to court, which is a very laborious process. It's slow. It's not resolved.
Right. And the Democrats want this to be relatively quick.
And the one thing that's different from the oversight problems versus impeachment is that the members of the, particularly the Intelligence Committee, have said, if we get no access, we are not going to court. We are going to list this obstruction from the committee as part of the impeachment investigation, that they will basically say, look, your stonewalling is evidence of why the president should be impeached.
So what was very striking today was Secretary Pompeo's letter, where he essentially, you know, again used the word browbeat, and is accusing Congress of trying to shake down State Department employees. If you notice, the two words he didn't use were presidential harassment, because ultimately he's adopting the president's playbook, which is to accuse any institution that is investigating the president or anyone around him of being illegitimate and wading into territory that they absolutely shouldn't. And so it was
isn't it a little bit rich for Secretary of State Pompeo to be suddenly a defender of the career foreign service officers of the State Department when he's on the call in which the president is, you know, denigrating the ambassador, career foreign service officer, to the president of Ukraine?
Absolutely. And the kinds of things he's laying out in his letter, this is the kind of stuff you would negotiate: when counsel can appear, who comes, how long they sit for. But the tone was striking. And again, it's striking for someone who is himself the subject of the inquiry. He was on the call.
And the only people it looks like the Intelligence Committee are going to be able to get to, at least in the short term, are Mr. Volker, who has left the State Department, and the former ambassador to Ukraine, who was all but fired from that.
And they have a good reason, though, to tell their own story behind closed doors and in whatever negotiation they can make. I mean, they have been dragged through the mud through this whole journey by Giuliani, by the Trump administration, even by Pompeo's silence. And so, while it may be true that Congress is being aggressive, I don't know. You know, there is more to hear from these individuals who have a lot, they know a lot about.
Right, but can the former ambassador, who I believe is still with the State Department, although at the stateside, can she go and talk if Pompeo has said no?
I mean, you know, that's a tricky question that goes back to Jeffrey's question. You know, I think there has been reporting that I think she's going to be meeting with congressional.
She said she'll
committees.
Do it, but not till next week.
Not
that's
till
where
next
we are
week.
Right now.
Not
right. But is that just a stall? I mean, given what Pompeo said, is this just like, oh, you know what? I'm not sure I'll do it at all, but I'll just say it's next week. I mean,
possibly. But I do think that Volker is really going to be key, because regardless of what the IG is going to say from the State Department tomorrow, on Thursday, Volker, who did resign, who has the ability and the will to go and talk behind closed doors to Congress on Thursday, he was named. And not only was he named, he was named as somebody who tried to help the Ukrainians navigate the political pressure that they felt from the president. That is really key.
And although, according to Giuliani, he was the guy who helped set up Giuliani's meeting.
I will just say, having worked with a lot of career foreign service officers, that is very hard to believe. I mean, Giuliani is seen as a proxy for President Trump. Volker, obviously, he has a long history, but, you know, he's a public servant. The likelihood of him roguely setting up meetings for Giuliani, of all people, with the government he's sitting in the country and representing the United States for, is so unbelievable.
Maybe not rogue.
Well, it doesn't have to be rogue. Right. I mean, right. Pompeo knew about it. He heard the call.
But the likelihood of him taking that upon his own, you know, his own self and making that decision, reaching out without there being engagement or direction from Pompeo and the White House, seems hard to believe to me.
But I wouldn't even be convinced that we know what Rudy Giuliani's role actually is. Like, is he the president's lawyer? Is he an official arm of the State Department? Is he to be regarded as a federal employee? I know the answer is no. But the point is, and this is going to come up when they start trying to claim that he can assert, the president can assert executive privilege over communications he had with Rudy Giuliani. We just don't know what he did. And so it's sort of odd to judge him in the context of these State Department employees. I think that will be the subject of litigation. What is his role and how is it legally significant?
I don't think it's going to be the subject of litigation. I think if they don't get cooperation from Giuliani, as they have said from the in the letter, we are going to view that as
obstruction. It's more meat on the impeachment.
Yeah, that they are not going to court. I mean, they want this thing over by the end of the year. If they go to court.
But doesn't that then sacrifice, I mean, any attempt to get Republicans in the Senate to come on board? I mean, if they are just seen as moving forward, not hearing from Giuliani, not hearing from giving Republicans the opportunity.
Well, I mean, I think they will make an effort to talk to Giuliani, but they will not get it. And I don't see how that could be held against the Democrats who tried to get
it. Well, it could be used as cover, no? I mean, they could say you were being, you know, bullying Giuliani.
And I'm sure that's true.
And I think as a general matter, they have to at least file the lawsuit to make it, to appear that they are at least going through the proper processes and so on. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they could just move on from Giuliani. If they, so for instance, if they think they have a basis for bringing him in to testify, slap him with a subpoena. If he doesn't appear, sue him and then see, or then just move on.
I also think there's, no newsflash in saying that there aren't very many Democrats who think that they have any chance of getting enough senators to convict
right.
in the Senate.
Right.
That's true.
What about Senator Grassley's comments today about the whistleblower? I'm just wondering how, as someone who knows the Hill well, how significant is that? I mean, because some people are saying, well, it's sort of a break from the president. He's essentially saying the whistleblower should be listened to and it should go through.
I was surprised that Grassley didn't say this last week when the whistleblower came out. He has historically, for decades, been probably the biggest champion for whistleblowers in the government. And the fact that when he was talking to Manu in the hall last week, I was shocked by the fact that he seemed to be siding with the president. It wasn't until he saw the comments that the president made not only last week, but this week, saying, I want to interview the whistleblower, did he seem to kind of wake up and go, oh, yeah, I'm the guy who protects whistleblowers. I don't necessarily think that he's, kind of a canary in the coal mine when it comes to Republicans, that this is a specific issue about protecting.
Yeah, I would say, Democrats, I think, are very clear-eyed in the Senate. And any I've talked to or staffers, they know there has to be 20 Republicans that would come and vote for impeachment at that point in the process. That is an enormous hill to climb. But this call transcript, the whistleblower, pushed a number of them who've been opposed to impeachment over the edge, that they needed to do something and they needed to be out there. They're hoping that this process in the House will maybe bring some. Maybe there are some cracks in the armor here. But they're clear-eyed about their
call me a cynic.
Realities.
I'm sorry, Jen.
I'll call you a cynic.
Call me a cynic. You can call me whatever you want, but call me a cynic. But, I'm
call
not
you late for dinner. Sorry.
There you go. Nice. But I'm not surprised at all that it took Grassley as long as he did, even that week, just because he's got two forces there. Number one, he's the whistleblower guy. But number two, he's a Republican senator with a Republican base that finds the president very popular. And until Republicans start turning on the president, people like Senator Grassley are just going to continue falling in line.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody. Up next, more breaking news. A blockbuster report from the New York Times on some pretty staggering proposals put forward by President Trump, apparently repeatedly, to stop migrants from crossing the southern border. Everything from alligators to snakes and shooting them in the legs. More breaking news tonight, an exclusive report in the New York Times documenting the lengths to which sources say President Trump was prepared to go to stop migrants crossing the southern border. Just a few of the remarkable details the White House insiders told the New York Times. The president, they say, wanted a water-filled trench filled with alligators or snakes to be constructed as a barrier in addition to the wall. And apparently talked about it so much that White House personnel actually went and tried to price it out, also suggesting that migrants be shot in the legs to slow them down or stop them. The story is incredibly fascinating. The details remarkably reported. The Times' Julie Hirschfeld Davis and Michael Shear share this. It's a new book that's coming out October 8th. The book is called Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. Again, it comes out October 8th. Both are CNN political analysts, and they join me as well. I mean, this reporting is just astonishing. You've been working on this for a long time. Just if you can, just kind of broad strokes, how serious was the president talking about shooting migrants in the legs and, you know, alligators and snakes?
Well, I mean, he was definitely very serious about being enraged, really, that he couldn't get his arms around this problem. And the conversation about shooting migrants in the legs came, you may remember, after he suggested publicly that if migrants threw rocks at Border Patrol agents who were there across the border, that they should treat it as a rifle and essentially shoot to kill. He was quickly told by his staff, that is not legal. We can't use lethal force unless we're defending ourselves. And so instead of dropping the idea, he was so desperate to try to figure out some way of holding people back that he then pretty seriously raised the question of, well, what if we just shot them in a non-lethal way, just to slow them down, just to deter them. He was really looking for ways to slow people down, to stop them from coming, to deter them from even trying. And I think importantly, the people that we spoke to really told us that it was hard to tell when he was serious about some of these things. He did keep asking about a trench filled with water. He would raise these possibilities of having snakes or alligators or other sort of countermeasures as part of that. And they never really knew, is he musing, is he just angry, or is this really something that we need to seriously consider? But in the case of the trench, they did end up pricing it out and finding that it would be three times as expensive as a wall.
A trench with, is that including the snakes or the alligators? Or
I'm not sure they ever priced out the animals.
I was trying to figure out who would they call to price out? But I mean, it's not just, he talked about electrifying the fence, having sort of flesh-piercing stakes on top of the electrified fence, and even painting it matte black.
Right. The matte black, he would call it flat black, and he would raise this all the time with Kirstjen Nielsen, with others in the DHS. The idea was that the fence would get so hot that it would be too hot to touch and would, you know, burn people who tried to climb up it. I think the big picture here is that from before he became president, he was obsessed with the idea of stopping migrants from entering, and he's been frustrated at every step of the way, partly by logistics and practicalities. Some of these things are just not practical, but also by his own staff. And the frustration that built over the first 2.5 years of the administration was as much with the people around him who were raising the practical problems. No, Mr. President, it would cost three times more. No, Mr. President, it's not practical. We don't have the materials wouldn't work, or
you can't take the people's land to build on.
Exactly. And so one of the things that we talk about in the story today and in the book more broadly is the way in which all of this led him to get rid of the people around him. I mean, ultimately, the week that we document in the paper today ends with him firing Kirstjen Nielsen, who was his Homeland Security Secretary, and, you know, over a very tumultuous and troubled sort of year and a half or so. But he did that with a lot of other people, too. And it was because they didn't want it, because some of them challenged internally what he wanted to do, and that frustrated him.
And it didn't stop with Kirstjen Nielsen. I mean, based on your reporting, then it was a slew of people who Stephen Miller and others believed weren't sort of sufficiently supportive of. But this is a corner that this is a trap of the president's own making. I mean, he made promises, obviously, during the election, which, you know, saying that Mexico was going to pay for the wall and it's going to be this big, beautiful wall with a beautiful door in it, and, you know, all the various promises he made. Without any, you know, there were many other Republicans on those debate stages saying, this is not going to happen. What you're talking about is made up. His aides were the ones who had the unfortunate job of actually saying those same things to him of, you know, the rubber hit the road. You can't actually build it like you're talking about.
Right, and this is one of the themes throughout the book, and frankly why we wanted to do this particular book is because this is kind of a theme that keeps coming back in Donald Trump's presidency, that he made all these promises, he talked in these grandiose ways about things he wanted to do when he was in office, but then he comes in and confronts the reality of governing. A lot of the logistics and practicalities, as Mike said, weren't working out, but also the law would not allow him to do a lot of the things that he was, that his impulse guided him to do. So, for instance, the story talks about how he wanted to completely shut down the border, the U.S. border. And he repeatedly talked about wanting to use the U.S. military to essentially police the border, which you can't do. But even when we talked with him in the Oval Office at the very end of the process of writing this book and asked him about it, he still seemed very disappointed. He said, you know, I could have 100,000 of the best military of the world, and I still can't stop people from coming. So he continues to be really angry and frustrated with the limits of his power as president.
And one of the things he said down when he went on a trip to the border is he actually told border agents, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong in your reporting, essentially that they should just stop allowing anybody in, nobody in, and that whatever trouble they got in, he would, you know, they would be okay. To the point that as soon as he left, the Border Patrol agents, their boss, told them, look, ignore what he just said. You do not have the right to just.
Right. This was a moment where the phrase that the president started using that day in that trip, and we were both down at the border that weekend, was that the country is full, that. The country is full, and so he told the border agents in this sort of room, this sort of back room after he had done a photo op in front of the wall, you know, just say that the country's full, tell you, turn people away, you just don't have to approve them. And it was a striking moment that underscored everything else in the story, which is that, you know, administration officials were constantly having to kind of walk the president back from the precipice, right? Mm-hmm. Walk him back from the edge of what could be a crisis, whether it's, the actually closing the border, which they got, you know, Republicans and business types and others to say this would destroy the economy, or whether it's legally saying to people that he works for, you can't do that. That's not.
Yeah, it's fast. I mean, just it's incredible reporting. I look forward to the book. Thank you so much. Julie Hirschfeld Davis, Michael Shear. Again, the book October 8th, correct?
Yep.
All right. Look forward to it. With Capitol Hill anticipating a surprise appearance from the State Department Inspector General, we'll talk with two former White House advisors, David Axelrod and David Gergen, for their take on what happens next. Our breaking news from the top of the hour, another inspector general trying to present what they say is urgent information to Congress. This time it's the State Department Inspector General who will speak to senior congressional staff members tomorrow. It's important to point out we do not know the subject matter, only that the sudden request for an urgent briefing appears unprecedented and that it comes on the heels of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo pushing back on Democratic demands to turn over documents and depose current and former officials at the State Department. Joining me is CNN senior political analyst and former advisor to four presidents, David Gergen, also CNN senior political commentator and former senior advisor to President Obama, David Axelrod. David Axelrod, what's your reaction to this request from the inspector general over at State? I mean, it seems like it's urgent. There's a lot we obviously don't know, but it's fascinating.
Well, the timing of it is very interesting. First of all, my feeling is this is like a fast-moving locomotive. It seems like there are developments every hour. This one's particularly interesting because it came right after Secretary Pompeo basically stiff-armed the Congress and said they need more time to put materials together and that he wasn't going to let his people get intimidated and bullied and so on. And then this outreach came from the inspector general, who apparently has documents he thinks are of importance to the committee, urgent on an urgent basis. So it's really intriguing, and I don't know what to make of it other than that there are things that will be in the committee's possession that perhaps the Secretary of State did not anticipate.
And David, I mean, this inspector general, correct me if I'm wrong, can operate essentially independently, just like the inspector general in the intelligence community who insisted on forwarding the whistleblower complaint to Congress.
Absolutely. That's the whole point of having an inspector general. It's an independent body or person within a government agency to be there as a watchdog and to keep Congress informed if there are misbehaviors underway there. We don't know what's going to be happening tomorrow, but I would assume that if it were good news for the president, it would be out by now.
I guess the question is, could it even be somebody else having given the documents to the inspector general? I mean, there's no would the inspector general, David Axelrod, have access to documents without somebody giving the inspector general those documents?
Well, we know that in the case of the whistleblower, there was a set of procedures, and it could be that someone in the legal counsel's office was approached by a whistleblower and then transferred some of these materials to the inspector general. I think that's the pattern that was followed with the DNI. So it could be the same thing here. One thing we should point out here, Anderson, is that we do have these checks and balances built into our government. I don't think any president loves inspectors general. Every president has been stung by an inspector general's report. But the fact that they are independent and they have traditionally maintained their independence is really important to the function of government.
David Gergen, I mean, how much knowledge at this point could the White House possibly have about whatever is going on over at the State Department? I mean, would the White House be aware of what the inspector general is meeting with them about tomorrow?
Well, they should be, especially, you know, in the case of what we just saw with the intelligence community. When the inspector general got the report and understood it, he did let McGuire know, who is the boss of the department, the acting boss. And I would assume that before the inspector general speaks tomorrow, that there will be some notification. But that it looks to me they're doing it in such a way as that Secretary of State Pompeo, who stopped others from going up and testifying, has had an end run performed on him. And the inspector general is going around him. And I'm sure Pompeo is extremely unhappy.
No, we can certainly speculate on some matters that may be a part of this. We know, for example, that the ambassador was summarily dismissed, a career diplomat in Ukraine, for apparently at the instance of Rudy Giuliani, because she wasn't playing ball in his maneuverings there. And then there's Giuliani himself, who is traveling around the world as the president's lawyer, but apparently being squired by employees of the State Department, which is highly unusual because he's out there performing essentially political chores. There are many, many things there are many exposures here for the State Department, and one suspects that they know what their exposures are. They just may not know which particular aspect of it is covered by this inspector general meeting.
And David Gergen, Volcker is still set to testify on Thursday. Testimony of the ambassador, the former ambassador, who was, as David Axelrod just pointed out, was forced out, was supposed to be, I believe it was supposed to be tomorrow. It's been moved to next week. Is it possible for Pompeo to stop her from actually appearing before Congress? She still, I guess, works for the State Department.
As long as she works for the State Department, I think she still does. I think he feels, and his letter certainly made it clear today, he believes that she can be stopped and has been stopped. But it does suggest that the other person involved, Volcker, who became sort of a go-between, may well have resigned from the government employment, so he could testify. You know, he's now free to testify. Mm-hmm. The guy, Pompeo can't stop that. But I do think that this whole thing is, there's a sense that from the Trump point of view that he's losing control of events, which is someplace he hates to be. And it's starting to cascade against him. You feel, I'm not sure if a dam is breaking, but you do begin to feel there are a cascade of bad stories. And that really could move the public opinion even more than it's moved already.
David Gergen, David Axelrod, thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Up next, more on the surprise briefing expected tomorrow on Capitol Hill from the State Department Inspector General. It's certainly a big night for breaking news. Let's check in with Chris, see what he's working on for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
Every night, and so many nights, it gets weirder and weirder. I don't know what this means. So what we're going to do tonight is have some people who worked in the FBI and in the State Department talk to us about what kind of protocol is this, where the inspector general of the State Department says they have to talk to certain high-ranking members of Congress. They had to know it was going to leak. You know, and the only vague guidance is that there's some documents that were obtained by its legal counsel. So we don't know what it means. And obviously, yeah. The only pitfall is you don't want to speculate about it. But it's more news on our watch. Also tonight, we have two people coming on to make the case about what's wrong with the impeachment inquiry.
All right, Chris, we'll look forward to that about 5 minutes from now. See you then. We'll be right back. I want to share some happy news about our friend and colleague Wajahat Ali and his daughter, Nuseiba. 3-year-old Nuseiba underwent liver surgery last week thanks to an anonymous living organ donor. Nuseiba's still in the hospital recovering, and her donor went home over the weekend and is resting. The donor said they wanted to do a good deed for a baby girl and wanted Nuseiba to live a long, healthy life. Nuseiba has already put on her lipstick and gone on an ice cream date with her dad, we're told, and that is certainly great to hear. One more note, there were more than 113,000 people in America on transplant waiting lists as of January of this year. So Wajahat wanted to encourage everyone to register as a donor because clearly it could save a life. If you want to help, contact your local hospital for donor registry information. Before I hand it over to Chris, today we relaunched Full Circle, our digital news show. It's streaming live weeknights at 5 Eastern at CNN.com/Full Circle, or you can watch it there later on demand. Let's hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Chris?
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.